I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word Podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word Podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.
MSW Media.
Welcome to Teacher Quit Talk. I'm Miss Redacted.
And I'm Mrs. Frazzled. Every week we explore the teacher exodus to find out what, if anything, could get these educators back in the classroom.
We've all had our moments where we thought, what the hell am I doing here? From burnout to bureaucracy to soul-sucking stressors and creative dead ends.
From recognizing when it was time to go to navigating feelings of guilt and regret afterwards, we're here to cut out the gaslighting and get real about what it means to leave teaching.
We've got insights from former teachers from all over the country who have seen it all. So get ready to be disturbed. Join us on Teacher Quit Talk to laugh through the pain of the U.S. education system. We'll see you there.
The rule of law is not just some lawyer's turn of phrase. It is the very foundation of our democracy. The essence of the rule of law is that like cases are treated alike. That there not be one rule for Democrats and another for Republicans. One rule for the powerful, another for the powerless, one rule for the rich, and another for the poor, or different rules depending upon one's race or ethnicity. To serve as Attorney General at this critical time is a calling I am honored and eager to answer.
So yeah, now it's clean up on aisle 45 time. And for a long while yet, it is going to be clean up on aisle 45.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 48 of Clean Up on Aisle 45. It's December 15th, Wednesday. I'm your co-host, Allison Gill. And with me, as usual, from the dungeon of lawyers I keep in my basement, is my co-host, Andrew Torres.
Hi, Allison. Always a pleasure. Thanks for letting me out, if only briefly here. At first, before we get into the meat of the show, time to thank our new patrons. So, Mari Mozaleski, Lisa Lencher Rosenbaum, Teresa Horn, Scott Taylor, and Stuart Teal. Thank you all so much.
That's right. You literally make this show possible. I'm not kidding about that. And if you'd like to get a shout out on this show, plus the ad-free feed, some of our bonus stuff, you can head over to patreon.com/aisle45pod. That's AISLE45POD. And you can sign up for as little as a buck an episode. And now, on with the show.
Yeah, Allison, today is all about the 1-6 committee, and we have so much news in connection with that. You know, we were just talking about this right before the record that this, you know, really did feel like a momentous decision and a really significant day in history. Focus on Mark Meadows. But we're going to lead off with a hastily scrawled letter from George J. Terwilliger III, former deputy attorney general and one of several hundred Terwilligers wandering around Washington, D.C.
That's right. Deputy attorney general for, I believe, H.W.
Yep.
And his argument here is that it would be, quote, unwise. And by the way, we wrote this script. We've seen this letter. We read the 51-page resolution before we just watched the hearing that aired on Monday, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the 1-6 committee. So a lot of this is going to now be through the lens of understanding what just happened on live television. And so when Terwilliger writes in a letter that it would be unwise to refer Meadows for prosecution under 2 U.S. Code Section 192, and contrary to law, when a public official asserts a good faith invocation of executive privilege, I have to now laugh even harder. So I guess I have two initial questions for you, Andrew. First, Is unwise a typical legal term? And second, is there any argument that Mark Meadows' assertions here are in good faith, considering what we just witnessed?
Yeah. So super easy questions. The answer to those are no and no. Let's start with the easiest of those questions. Unwise. Look, there is a reason that longstanding establishment George H.W. Bush DAG, George J. Terwilliger III, is using the word unwise in a letter to Congress because he knows he can't use the word illegal. He knows he can't use the phrase contrary to law, right? This is very, very careful language. And his argument is something that I think even Trump supporters would probably be a little bit hesitant to admit in public, right? And that is, if the president, or I mean, not just the president, right, for purposes of executive privilege, anyone appointed by the president decides to tell Congress to go fuck itself, then Congress has no recourse, none. And by the way, how that's supposed to fit in with a separation of powers justification is really kind of beyond me.
Yeah, it's like making an argument the sky is blue while also addressing Rayleigh scattering. I don't get it at all. And I was shocked that this is honestly their lead-off argument here. But here it is, page 2 in black and white. Quote, during an 1886 floor debate in the Senate regarding a demand for executive documents, one senator seeking the documents acknowledged that, should the president order them withheld, there is no remedy.
And again, because this is the kind of thing that only jumps off the page, I think, if you're a lawyer and you're used to reading what these letters are supposed to look like, I need to be crystal clear here. The opinion of one senator 10 years after legislation has been passed is not legislative history. It is not informative about legislative history. And for four decades, it's not even the kind of thing that like courts would look to as evidence, right? Like this is something a guy thought a decade after Section 192 was passed might be the interpretation. It is a cherry-picked quote from a century ago, and it illustrates really like the kind of desperation that animates this entire effort.
Yeah, and I think to me, the most telling thing about this memo, this letter, is that basically all of the legal citations contained in it are to various awful of legal counsel opinion letters. And as we know, the OLC is an executive branch appointee at the Department of Justice, hired and fired at the pleasure of the president. And I mean, how many OLC memos did Barr whip up, you know,
right,
to just
right.
say shit was legal?
Yeah, and again, not directly, but you know, you tell the particular U.S. attorney who is responsible for the Office of Legal Counsel, hey, I'd kind of like to see X, and I think your boss would too. Yeah, exactly.
Oh anyway, yeah, sorry, I'm thinking a Stellar Wind. I'm thinking a torture CIA. Anyway, historically, what the OLC does is write letters to back up legally what you're saying. Now, I'm just a lowly GS 14 trying to get legal shit prepped. So I got told no by the Office of Legal Counsel all the time. But you know, when I couldn't fire them if they didn't return an opinion I didn't like. When those letters come to interpreting presidential power, they're obviously manifestly self-serving, and we saw that in spades, as I said, with Barr, the former guy's administration.
Yeah, and look, I think I'd like to go even a half step further than that, right? And I'd like to say that OLC letters on the power of the presidency are inherently self-serving and should never be cited, right? Like we saw that forming the basis of, you know, what Robert Mueller thought circumscribed his authority, right? An OLC letter that says you can't indict a sitting president. Well, look, it's not surprising the OLC would say that. That's not a settled question. And so my argument would be, and I'm prepared to defend this with anybody, OLC letters should never be consulted, cited, relied upon in that circumstance, right? They should be treated as a person coming down on the side that's best for their boss. And it's a little mind-boggling to me that nobody else seems to share my opinion on that. And I mean that for Biden as well, right? Like presidents want the maximum power that they could possibly have, and they hire somebody whose job it is to comb through whatever slim legal authority is. And the, you can't, I mean, you know, you, you, You did this at great length on Mueller, She Wrote, right? Like, the authority for you can't indict a sitting president is infinitesimal, right? It is the thinnest of possible reeds, and it has just been recycled as OLC letters are like, well, you know, here's something that was written in 1974. And it's terrible.
Yeah, and we know the howler monkeys on SCOTUS, though, are all about executive supreme power, which is, by the way, why I thought it was a chef's kiss that the D.C. appellate court came back with a decision in the National Archives case, and their reasoning was, but the president has extreme executive wieldy power, and you can't have two presidents at once, and the president said he's not invoking privilege. And the president is the all and powerful Great Oz. I mean, the way they wrote it and teed it up for this very particular Supreme Court pleased me to no end. But
I agree 100% on your take. And I think you're exactly right. And I would say the game plan on that is to try and forestall this Supreme Court from granting immediate injunctive relief to block it. So,
right. Yeah. Kavanaugh would have to say, but wait, no, the president doesn't have that much power. And that's not right. going to fucking happen. So. Let's talk about executive privilege, okay? Because Terwilliger's argument, Terwilliger-third.
Terwilliger-third, that's a great nickname.
Thank you. That's what I've been calling him. It's a little hard to say, though. His argument is that separation of powers principles means that the president and his immediate advisors are absolutely immune from having their testimony compelled. That seems to ignore the Nixon and Clinton administrations. I seem to recall presidents having to turn over documents, tapes, sit for depositions. I feel like, am I taking crazy pills, Andrew?
No, you're not. You're not crazy, right? So again, you gotta this letter Terwilliger wrote takes this very narrow legal argument that crafts the, you know, very definition of what lawyers will call a distinction without a difference, right? So what he says is that presidential aides are immune from testimonial compulsion by a congressional committee, right? Now, Clinton and Nixon were, of course, compelled to testify by the courts. Now, under a separation of power standpoint, it makes no difference, right?
Well, No, Andrew, the courts get 5 points. And Congress gets like 3 points and the president gets like 1 point.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I can't follow it. Like, either executive privilege is absolute or it isn't. And we've known since 1973 that it is not remotely absolute. The last vestiges of that were relitigated during the Clinton administration in connection with the Paula Jones litigation, right? And then because our last president had zero regard for law, precedent, or, you know, anything, it was relitigated a third time. The executive privilege's absolute position has never won in our courts. It has lost 3 times in a row. And writing it again in a letter is just, it's a loser.
Well, what else do they have, really? I mean, you know, from the way I see it, and this is all speculation, you know, Meadows was cooperating, handing stuff over, wrote his book. Trump got the book, got pissed, called up Meadows and said, hey, remember that RNC hack? I got a bunch of shit on you, bro. I'm going to need you to go on Fox News and tell everyone your book is fake news. And then I'm going to need you to take my friend here, Terwilliger the Third, and have him be your lawyer and stop cooperating with the committee. So there's a lot of speculation in there, but I'm certain he at least got a call.
This is the kind of thing that if you had said this to me 5 years ago, I would have said you're crazy, right? But but we know that Donald Trump is unparalleled at strong arm tactics. We have transcripts of the game plan that he, I just need you to find 11,000 votes. I just need you to make a press announcement. You know, I'm going to happy to do you a favor, but you got to do me a favor first. I mean, we have his words. We know what happens. So,
well, that's why I think there's compromise, right? Because he doesn't have shit on Raffensperger.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But that Nunes would quit Congress to go to work for a firm that's under investigation by FINRA and the SEC, or, you know, that Meadows would get pulled out of Congress to be chief of staff, that Ratcliffe would be pulled out of Congress to be DNI and just absolutely destroy their careers and potentially risk jail. You don't do that because, you know, you're afraid of just making Trump mad. in my own personal opinion. But
I just want to underscore two things. Number one, how unlikely it is that I would agree with you given the history of my career. And number two, that I agree with you.
Well, yeah, because I mean, if I were Meadows and I didn't know, and you know, I don't have any dirt on me anywhere, I'd be like, no, what, you know, I'm cooperating. This was on you, man. Even Don Jr., and we'll get into that in a minute, thought you were being an asshole that day. So, you know, I'm going to cooperate because I might end up, you know, cooperating with the committee, pleading out if the DOJ does an investigation. But in the long run, I would have a long and lustrous career of being a national hero, and I would be a John Dean instead of a John Mitchell, and I would write books that people might actually buy. And so, you know, to give all that up, the only cool life that you have potentially, it just doesn't make any sense to me. Question for you about the argument that Section 192 requires something called willful default. The letter seems to argue that willful means in bad faith. So if Meadows actually believes that executive privilege applies here, that's good faith, and therefore the law doesn't apply?
So you will not be surprised to learn that of the 285 cases interpreting and applying to USC Section 192, including multiple at the Supreme Court level, literally zero have required, stated, opined, thought, comprehended that the prosecution must prove bad faith by the defendant, right? And I could get into some of the like technical legal reasons why, but I think there's a really simple way to break this down, and that is it would render the statute incredibly stupid. And I know that George Terwilliger III knows that. So let's break down what Section 192 says. It says that you're guilty of this misdemeanor, every person who, having been summoned as a witness to give testimony or produce papers, you can become guilty in one of two ways. Either you willfully make default, right? That is, you don't show up. Or who, having appeared, refuses to answer any question pertinent to the question under inquiry. And if you do that, then you shall be deemed guilty of a misdemeanor.
Okay. All right. So, in other words, this interpretation would say if you show up for the subpoena and then fail to answer a relevant question, whether in good faith or bad faith, any faith, Michael, right. Wham faith, right? Then you're guilty of the crime under 192. And I retract that statement because it wasn't Wham, was it? It was just George Michael.
That's true.
Yeah, I've got Whamageddon on the brain. I got knocked out earlier today. So anyway, if you don't show up at all, it's not a crime unless the prosecutor also proves beyond a reasonable doubt that you refuse to show up in bad faith. That seems to interpret the law in such a way that you'd be an idiot ever to show up to testify to Congress at all. And that seems like a dumb idea to have that law in the first place if Congress ever wants anyone to testify.
Yeah, that's right. And it just goes to show you that the willfully makes default just means you intend not to show up, right? What that is excluding, what the actual legislative history and application to USC 192 make clear is that willfully makes default means you decide not to show up. You thumb your nose at Congress. You say, yeah, I know you subpoenaed me, but no, right? That's all that they need to show. If they needed to show that you had to do that in bad faith, again, you would have that situation that you just described, which is it would be way easier to prosecute the people who do show up than the ones who don't. And just a simple gut check will tell you that cannot be what the law is. Now, I should also add, it probably wouldn't be hard to show that the Meadows objections here are bad faith. I mean, they're certainly self-serving. We haven't even gotten into the question of waiver, which I imagine we will do when we talk about the Monday evening vote to hold Meadows in contempt. So the legal arguments here are not great.
Yeah. So in connection with the vote, the 1-6 committee also released a 51-page summary of their findings, the resolution, right? The report.
Yep.
That lists the kind of testimony they want from Mark Meadows. who appears to have been the point man for Trump's coordination of 1-6. And now that we've seen these hearings, it's even more obvious. I thought these requests were really, really telling, such as Mr. Meadows exchanged text messages with and provided guidance to an organizer of the January 6th rally on the Ellipse after the organizer told him that things have gotten crazy and I desperately need some direction, please.
I would love to know who that organizer is. There's a reason they are using, you know, an organizer one. Oh man, I have some thoughts.
Yeah. And with regards to the hearing tonight, which we'll get into in a minute, the members of Congress, I want to know who they are as well, but they're still investigating. And there's this one, quote, Mr. Meadows sent an email to an individual about the events on January 6th and said the National Guard would be present to protect pro-Trump people and that many more would be available on standby.
Yeah, we heard that during the hearing. That seems like a smoking gun to me. I mean, this is the first time I have seen it that starkly, right? But if you have an agent of the president, you have his chief of staff saying, don't worry, the president is going to call out the National Guard to protect his people.
You know what I think? I think that they knew in advance or they thought that anti-protesters would show up, that they could label anarchists and Antifa and Black Lives Matter protesters. And that would be one of the reasons to call a national emergency, secure the National Guard, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's why they were protect pro-Trump people. I think they were expecting non-pro-Trump people to be there. But of course, that's just speculation.
That's really interesting. I haven't heard anybody advance that position, and I think that it's worth considering.
Oh, thank you. And there are reports of messages being sent from various Republican legislators, sitting members of Congress. That can't make House Republicans happy.
You've emphasized that. I want to talk about that in connection with the actual vote. But, you know, it underscored, this is another thing we were talking about sort of right before we went to record. And that is, I got the real sense, right, even from the Democrats on this committee, right, but which, you know, it's a majority of Democrats, that when they said we take a historic step in referring out for criminal contempt one of our former members, I think that's right. Like, I think there is, for good or for ill, right? Like, I could certainly see this being a terrible thing that, like, Congress mostly wants to protect its members and buddies, right? Like, but I think it does underscore, you know, how hard this is to have taken one of their own and kind of said, hey, we're at the end of our rope with you. And I think it really gives insight into, you know, why Kinzinger is retiring, for example. Like, this is a tough thing to do to your party. It does not mean, right, like, I'm not going to, you know, endorse Liz Cheney for president.
No.
But she's done monstrous, horrible things. And, you know, her father's a war criminal. But like, this is a hard thing to do. It's doubly hard for the two of them. And they ought to get credit for putting country first here.
Yeah. And even members of the Dems, you know, this is the legislative body. It's somber and it's depressing. But another bit of desired testimony I found very interesting, quote, Mr. Meadows traveled to Georgia to observe an audit of the votes days after then President Trump complained that the audit had been moving too slowly and claimed that the signature match system was rife with fraud. I think Lindsey was also complaining about signatures. That trip precipitated Mr. Trump's call to Georgia's Deputy Secretary of State and later Secretary of State.
Yep.
Andrew, you said on OA opening arguments, but the case against Trump for committing election fraud in Georgia is a slam dunk. We've talked about this. Does it surprise you to see this level of coordination and awareness with the 1-6 committee?
It really does, right? And it's very, very encouraging, right? Like, you and I kind of vacillate between, you know, the kind of, hey, you know, where are the indictments of Trump and Trump cronies? You know, we're a year out with, the wheels of justice move slowly, that sort of thing. And this is something that strongly indicates that people at the highest levels of decision making are not compartmentalizing this, right? Like, they're not taking their eye off the ball. And look, for the 1-6 committee, which is now the subject of multiple pieces of litigation in which the primary argument being advanced by those not in compliance is, hey, this is a sham. You're not really interested in legislation. You're really trying to ferret out criminal conduct. And look, like, that is beyond the jurisdiction of the 1-6 committee, right? Like, it cannot pursue information for the purposes of a criminal referral, certainly not for a state criminal referral, right? So they've got to tread carefully here. And again, I think that it's really, really encouraging that despite all of that, that's what they want to do, like, remain focused kind of on the big picture from the top down.
Yeah. And I want to talk a little bit more about encouraging information about the coordination between state, local district attorneys, district's attorney. Is that? I don't know. local DAs. We'll just do that.
District's attorney.
Attorneys general, state attorneys general, the Department of Justice, grand juries, and the 1-6 committee all working together. We know they've talked about working together. And I saw an interesting clip from Zoe Lofgren, and I want to talk about that after this after the hearing tonight. But we're gonna kick off our discussion about that hearing. And I want to start with that Zoe Lofgren quote, but we have to take a quick break. So everybody stick around. We'll be right back.
Hey, everybody, it's AG, and today's show is brought to you by Policy Genius. Get your property cold weather ready by making sure you have the right insurance coverage. Just head to policygenius.com, answer a few questions about yourself and your property, and Policy Genius will show you price estimates and policies that fit your search and help you understand your options. The Policy Genius team can look for ways to save you more money, and if they find a better rate than the one you're paying now, they'll switch you over for free. You know, recently I switched all of my insurance off of USAA because they advertise on Tucker Carlson, and Policy Genius helped me find a great rate. Policy Genius saves customers an average of $1,250 a year over what they were paying for home and auto insurance before. Their licensed experts will help you understand your options and apply for a policy. The Policy Genius team works for you, not the insurance companies, so you can trust them to offer unbiased help and advocate for you at every step of the way until you're covered. Policy Genius doesn't add on extra fees or sell your info to third parties either. And they have thousands of five-star reviews across Google and Trustpilot. Since 2014, Policy Genius has helped over 30 million people shop for insurance, so head to policygenius.com to get your free home and auto insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com.
So, Andrew, first of all, I have to say I'm still shell-shocked from this, watching this hearing. First of all, it was an incredible hearing. It was very well put together. It laid out a lot of important things. It told a story about Mark Meadows, just Mark Meadows, who is a pivotal figure in the insurrection. But yeah. I wish that they would have told us before, because I found out a couple hours before, maybe an hour before the hearing, that it was going to be much more than just a vote, and that there was going to be new information released and new text messages released, including from people in the Trump family and members of Congress. Found that an hour before the hearing. That is bullshit marketing. They need to, I don't even think CNN was going to run it until they found out from their source, Jamie Rangel, that they had that kind of information that was going to be presented. That's that shit you announce a week ahead of time and sell tickets. And, you know, that to me was ill-prepared. I don't think enough people saw what happened tonight because of them not sounding the alarm about how important this hearing was going to be.
I think you make an excellent point on the messaging on our side.
But I also think it shows that maybe how tip of the iceberg this is, and how lit as fuck the hearings in January are going to be, the public hearings.
I think that's right. I mean, my first note when it came to the guarded way in which they introduced a just the barest portion of some of the evidence that they have connecting Mark Meadows to folks inside the insurrection, right? Organizers of 1-6, and also serving as the conduit to sitting members of Congress, members of the House of Representatives, right? Like at first, when they sent messages, I thought, okay, maybe they're referring to, state legislators, right? And, we've just seen utterly bonkers statements by state. No. They mean sitting members of Congress, right? People with whom these people serve. And my biggest takeaway was, wow, do they know so much more than they're saying, right?
They've been able to keep this as tight-lipped as they have.
Yeah.
Which brings me to the Zoe Lofgren comment. After the hearing, I was watching and I saw her jump on with Anderson Cooper, who is reporting live from Kentucky for the absolutely devastating weather, climate, tornadoes, destruction that's been happening there. And my heart, and I know yours too, goes out to everyone who was impacted by this series of tornadoes. In all of those states.
Absolutely.
But she jumped on and he said, so, you know, could the Department of Justice issue a subpoena to a grand jury to get the documents that he's not handing over? Or, it was kind of his backdoor, is the Department of Justice doing anything question, which was, I thought, very cleverly done. He's like, but is that a possible remedy? And she said, and I urge you to go and watch the video. I'm going to post it on my Twitter and our Twitter. And she she's very adept at avoiding that question. And she says whether or not the Department of Justice is pursuing another case like that, because she's like, because this case we're pursuing is criminal contempt. That's all we're doing right now. But whether or not the DOJ is pursuing those other crimes against Meadows besides contempt, she says they're very tight-lipped. It's not appropriate for them to discuss who they're prosecuting and who they're investigating. In fact, you won't know about it until they have an indictment or until they say they've declined to prosecute. Wow. Because if I actually unpack that statement, I wish I could describe the look on her face. It was like, it was almost like, how am I going to talk about this?
Yeah.
It says to me, because she said, you'll never know until they indict or if they tell you they're not going to do it. That sounds to me like they're doing it. And they're very tight-lipped. She just said, they're very tight-lipped. It's not appropriate for them to discuss this. And, you know, if we think about the fact that we have public reporting that there is a grand jury impaneled in D.C., the U.S. Attorney's Office. They put Molly Gaston, she's the assistant U.S. attorney in D.C., in charge of that, and also put her in charge of, quote, politically charged cases involving January 6th. And they have, and it was noted by the person who testified to that grand jury, they also have testified before the committee. That means the committee is working with the grand jury in D.C., which means they're working with the Department of Justice. And like you said in the past segment, we know that they are working very closely with Fani Willis, Georgia D.A., Secretary of State's office, Raffensperger, et cetera. So there is massive, massive coordination that we are unaware of.
So yes to all of that. And let's, you said about eight amazing things, and I want to try and unpack all of them. The first is, absolutely right. If you know nothing is happening, then the answer to that question is, I don't know anything that's right. That's a DOJ decision and you're talking to the wrong person, right? That's a super easy answer to give. And so to me, this illustrates that Zoe Lofgren is aware that that's a discussion that's taking place, right? So that's sort of point one. Point two is, I think we sort of cavalierly toss around, that Donald Trump was a criminally insane ex game show host. And so it's super easy to be like, well, he should be indicted in New York and he should be indicted in Georgia and he should be indicted federally. Like, that's obvious because Donald Trump is a criminal, a lifelong criminal, stupid, unrepentant, and until the presidency, bad at it.
And that's the court of public opinion, which is why they can't talk about ongoing investigations, because in Lind v. the United States v. Lind, they said, you can't try this in a court of public opinion. You'll taint future juries and you'll fuck up the shit, because everyone knows Trump's a criminal. If we come out and say it too, we're going to lose on appeal.
All right. So we're up to nine things like that. You're exactly right. The John Walker Lind, like, it's an absolutely perfect example. Put a pin in that. Because my point was going to be a little bit tangential to that. And that is, based on public knowledge, certainly prior to today, if you had asked me, do you think there is a criminal, not a criminal contempt, right? That's what they referred out, right? That is 2 USC 192. It's a misdemeanor, right? And the sole point of that is to compel his attendance, right? Those aren't real crimes, right? The question that Anderson Cooper asked and the non-answer that we got, if you had asked me, do I think that the Department of Justice is about to or is considering indicting Mark Meadows in connection with the 1-6 insurrection, I would have come down 80-20 the other way yesterday, right? I would have said, look, like, it would be a huge step. It would certainly be a huge step for it to be a former member of Congress and White House chief of staff. It's going to be very difficult to get the documents because there are going to be claims of executive privilege and everything. The fact that it is the other way, right? The fact that it is it has risen to that level suggests the coordination with DOJ, DC prosecutors in connection with the 700 pending insurrection cases, and says that they don't have one guy or five guys. They've got dozens plus who have said, oh, yeah, no, I called Mark Meadows, right? Like, I talked to so-and-so who talked to Mark Meadows. Again, I want to be very, very clear. We're both being speculative here. That was not said tonight, but that is what I infer from that discussion, because that's the only other way you would get that information, right? The 9,000 pages that Meadows has turned over are not incriminating. That's why he turned them over. His public statements are not particularly incriminating. That's why he's made them. To say that you're at a point where the DOJ has to choose between indicting or making a declination decision suggests that they have a lot of evidence.
Yeah. But I will say that a lot of the what we now know to be 9,000 documents, text messages and communications handed to the committee by Mark Meadows included text messages. And the committee tonight in the hearing, only went over things that Mark Meadows handed over, because this is a contempt hearing. And when you hand shit over and they want to ask you questions about it, you waive privilege by handing it over. And they also brought up the fact that he went on Fox News a couple weeks ago. He went on Laura Ingraham a few months after the insurrection to talk about 1-6. His book came out the day Terwilliger told him they're not going to cooperate anymore. And he talks about 1-6 in the book. And when you when you talk about stuff, you can't claim privilege over it.
So can I put a little asterisk by
that? Well, yeah, because I was going to say there are exceptions to this, and that's why you are here, my legal friend.
So that is absolutely true. If we're talking about the two classic invocations of privilege that you usually see from witnesses, right, which is attorney-client privilege or some other consultation privilege, or right, the privilege against self-incrimination. And in both of those cases, the privilege gets waived when you decide selectively to release information, because, and there's a slogan that sort of driven into our brains as baby law students, and that is the privilege can be used as a shield but not a sword, right? Like, you can't be forced to testify against yourself, but you can't strategically use that fact to then, like,
obstruct justice.
Yeah, only the good things, right? That and then be like, oh no, well, when it comes to answering questions, I'm going to plead the fifth. Same thing with attorney-client privilege, right? Like, if you decide, you say, hey, I consulted my lawyer on drafting this document, then that's it. We're done. can't ask you anything more about that. If you say, hey, I consulted my lawyer on drafting this document, but I can tell you everybody in that room definitely thought it meant X. Well, you know, congratulations, you've just waived attorney-client privilege, right? Like you cannot offensively release some information, but not others. The asterisk is, in when you're talking about executive privilege, that there is figuring out to whom that privilege belongs. And it is worth pointing out here that Donald Trump has not asserted executive privilege in connection with Mark Meadows not appearing.
He's asserted it over other people.
Yeah.
But not Meadows.
That's exactly right. And I think
it's because he's mad about the book.
I was going to go in a slightly different direction, and I was going to say, I think it's because he wants to maintain the position that like there is no right, because think about what executive privilege means and is for. Executive privilege is, I'm President Torres. I'm trying to figure out the proper response to the latest Chinese tariff, and I call all my advisors into the room, and I want to have that like one crazy, I'm gonna be like, Allison, what do you think? And I want you to be like, we should bomb China back into the Stone Age, and I want everybody else in the room to be like, that's terrible, you're a horrible person, President Torres, why did you hire Allison Gill as one of your advisors? And I would say, because she brings this kind of perspective, and we've now at least reviewed the full range of options. I'm sorry I've turned you into this terrible scapegoat here. But look, like, that's the justification for executive privilege, right? It is why Hillary Clinton maintained the private email server, right? Like, it is because when you are Secretary of State, right, when you are a close presidential advisor, you want to deliver your best and your most candid advice, and you don't ever want that advice to then be broadcast in public and used against you, particularly if you have future political ambitions, which, we know she did.
So that being known, then why would, if it's not the book, if he's not mad about the book, why would he not send a letter saying Meadows has executive privilege?
So here's the thing. If the position you want to take is, I didn't know any of that. I had no idea somebody was going to turn. I mean, yeah, I went out to the Ellipse, but like, they were going to storm the Capitol.
He wants Meadows to be the fall guy.
Yeah. It again, total beans. But if you want to make the argument that you never discussed 1-6 before 1-6, right? Leaving alone, I get the, mountain of evidence, the fact that John Eastman came in with a memo of like, here's how to do exactly what they wound up doing, right? Like,
yeah, no, but all of these texts that we're about to talk about, yeah, they all went to Meadows. So the question becomes, did Meadows keep that to himself and sit on it? Or did he tell the president? Now, he did respond in these text messages that he's been pushing it. But I mean, that could be he's been pushing it to somebody else. I don't know who's between the chief of staff and the president of the United States. Well, I called my mom and I told her that should happen too. Yeah. But it doesn't say I told Trump, I told Donald this, And so he could try to mob his way out of that. And that's the thing, right? That's the fall guy thing. So is it cool if we go over some of these texts? Because they blow.
Yeah, let's do that.
My mind. First of all, I wanted to say that something Benny Thompson said that I thought was some import. Oh, not some, a lot. I love that he brought this up. He said, if you're listening at home, Mr. Bannon, Mr. Meadows, Mr. Clark, I want you to know this. History will be written about these times, about the work this committee has undertaken, and history will not look upon any of you as martyrs. Damn.
Yeah. It I have been waiting, and I don't know that line is it. It was not televised enough for it to be it, but one of the things
it's not it. But I mean, because that's what everybody's worried about, is that Bannon's just going to be, I'll go to jail for 30 days. I don't get, DGAF, because I'm good to raise money, and I'm the martyr now. I'm the political prisoner. But, you know, just to remind everybody, historically, they're not going to look at you like that, bro.
And the analogy I was going to make is, you know, I have been waiting, admittedly, since January of 2017 for, you know, the at long last, have you no sense of decency, sir, moment, right? I'm not saying that this is it. This is definitely not it. But you know, that at some point, I kind of would like to see, you know, the 30% of this country that identifies as Republicans, but, you know, is not on board with QAnon and the big lie and everything else to you know, be repentant about what they've been caught up in. And
yeah. Well, I don't know that we're going to get that moment. It's a double down type situation for a lot of this. To me so far, the biggest, most amazing speech I've seen so far is probably the Midnight in Washington speech by Schiff at the impeachment. But not, you know, again, we're in the early days here. So let's talk about some of these texts. First of all, every fucking buddy texted Meadows, Fox News anchors, his kids, or at least one of them that we know of, members of Congress, and advisors, former aides to the president, all texting Meadows because they, you know, they don't text Trump directly, I guess, or maybe they do. I'm not sure. But let's start with the Fox News folks, if we may.
and I think it's good to start there because it cannot be overstated how much the entire Trump presidency was driven by shit he saw on Fox News. Right. So this strikes at the core of, you know, the people who've been strongly influencing the administration from the beginning. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, no. It's stunning because that night, Hannity, Carlson, Ingram were all on Fox saying, who are these instigators? Is it Antifa? Is it Black Lives Matter? Is it anarchists? Who are these agitators? That they had that message to go, ready to go on day one. I'm sure that's no accident that they were going to blame the left. In fact, when we see the text that says, you know, protect pro-Trump people only.
Right.
They were expecting the left to be there. We were not, because we're not fucking stupid. Okay. So, I mean, there were, you know, we had a lot of press and everything like that. I don't want to say anybody who was there was fucking stupid, but we weren't there to agitate. So Laura Ingram texts while it's happening, while 1-6 is happening. Remember, later on that night, she goes on television to blame Antifa. She texts Meadows and says, the president needs to tell people in the Capitol to go home. This is hurting all of us. He's destroying his legacy. Does that sound like she really thinks it's Antifa?
No. Yeah.
Brian Kilmeade said, please get him on TV, destroying everything you have accomplished. So, first of all, I'm surprised he thinks they accomplished anything. But that shows the genuine nature of this tweet. Yeah. Or this text message, excuse me. And then, of course, Sean Hannity. Can he make a statement? Ask people to leave the Capitol. Now, why would Trump go and make a statement to ask Antifa to leave the Capitol?
Well, how would you, Sean, how'd you like 50% of that?
So that's, there we have the Fox News set. And those are just three examples. And these are texts that Meadows handed over to the committee because, again, they're trying to prove contempt. And they're claiming that he's waiving privilege by handing these things over. So these are just the ones they have.
Yeah.
Tell me about the Don Jr. text, because this blew my mind.
This blew my mind as well. In addition to, I don't know, it's still my ears, but the like casual swearing in Congress now, I guess that's the new normal. So, but we had Liz Cheney reading Don Jr.'s text of, he's got to condemn this shit ASAP. Now, that is his dad. Right. That's what Don Jr. is saying. He, my dad, has got to condemn this shit ASAP. The Capitol Police tweet is not enough. And I put a pin in that. Right. Don Jr. subsequently texted, we need an Oval Office address. He has to lead now. It's gone too far and gotten out of hand. And Meadows replied, I'm pushing it hard. I agree. right? And that you raised that issue earlier, right? In terms of figuring out, Meadows as the fall guy versus the level of communication. I'm pushing it hard to your son. Seems to indicate I'm talking to dad.
Yeah, and also, I've got to be honest here. This sort of clears Don Jr. of any pre-knowledge of a physical attack on the Capitol, or at least it getting to a point where it's gotten out of hand, because there is a text message from Jr. Yeah. saying, you've got to stop this shit. He's got to condemn it ASAP. It's gone too far and gotten out of hand.
I think you are right to seize upon that language, right? And that
if I were Junior's lawyer, I'd be like, see, I didn't know anything about the insurrection. Yeah. I didn't know anything about that. I wanted a peaceful rally at the Ellipse. Da, 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 da.
Well, to me, it's gone too far.
Yeah. From what was it supposed to be?
Right. Well, that suggests, and again, we do not know that Don Jr. was in the war room, right? That was described that to which John Eastman delivered the memo.
Right.
But it is consonant with having been in the war room and having seen the memo and been like, okay, right. Well, whatever procedural devices you want to use to invalidate the election and keep my dad in office in perpetuity throughout the universe, great, go ahead with that. The moment we have, dude in a headdress with, zip ties looking to, all right, now we've gone too far.
It also wouldn't preclude him from being part of a plan to have rioters go to the Capitol and attack counter-protesters so they can declare a national emergency, call out the National Guard for their own purposes, institute martial law, the Insurrection Act, whatever. Or that it's just supposed to, delay. But you're like, yeah, what? That the question there for Don Jr. is too far from what? What was the original plan?
And I'd also like to see the timeline. I mean, we know the rough timeline, right? Because it's after that first tweet. But is this 3:30? Is this trying to figure it out? Because there's also a level of we played our hand and lost. Right. And now it's time to mitigate the damages that come from that.
Yeah. And this is kind of what I was talking about earlier. This sort of establishes for me that Trump knew.
It certainly is very, very good, anecdotal evidence.
It'd be interesting. Interesting to see Meadows' other replies to text messages. We only have the texts to him. We don't have, except for that particular one, which I thought was a good pointed one to use. But yep. This is early on. This isn't the mother load.
Nope.
By any means. And that's what we have to remember. So I'm watching this bowled over in my seat by what I'm seeing. And this is just crumbs.
Yeah.
These are tidbits.
The iceberg metaphor, with which we started the segment, is, I think, a perfect way to kind of conclude the segment, right? Like it is, there is, everyone is being so careful. There is so much more information out there. And, if it is very clear to me at the minimum that the 1-6 committee is not a, do nothing committee that is just sort of rehashing the stuff that they have. Where that goes ultimately, like we don't know, but I think this illustrates you cannot suggest that they've been anything but on top of their duties.
Yeah, that's just the tip of the iceberg. And that, the hearings that are going to come at the end of January, the public hearings, weeks of public hearings with witness testimony. I mean, I just can't even imagine if I was as bowled over as I was today by what they revealed today, what is yet to come. It's just going to be intense.
Almost as if it will be a good time to listen to this show. So,
Yes, please share it widely. It's going to be lit AF. All right. Everybody, we will be right back. We've got some great comings and goings and another cleanup segment. Actually, we have other news this week besides this. But
love it.
This, man, this hearing is historically gigantic. I don't even know how I don't have words. I've been using so many expletives and superlatives the last 4.5 years, Andrew, that I don't even yet know how to describe bigger things than what I've already described. So I'm at a loss for words, but we'll talk more when we get back.
We're cutting for time. I had a little sidebar about how this is, you know, the first criminal contempt referral for out of Congress for a member of Congress since Sam Houston in 1832, and you know, all kinds of great early 19th century politics. Not going to get into that. Maybe we'll, you know, do some later date. But yeah, like whenever you do a thing that hasn't been done in 189 years, it's a big thing. So this was a big day.
Yeah, it definitely was. All right, everybody, stick around. We'll be right back with comings and goings.
Hey, everybody, it's Allison for Cleanup on Aisle 45, and this portion of the show is brought to you by Feels CBD. That's F-E-A-L-S. It isn't about what you feel. It's about what you don't feel, like stress, anxiety, and pain. That's what CBD does for you. Keeping a clear head and feeling great is easy with Feels. You have no hangovers, no addictions, and if you haven't tried CBD, I recommend it. Feels CBD is safe and organic, well-sustained, and it's all certified and fair trade and all that. It's amazing. It's an amazing product, and it's helped me sleep better. It's reduced my anxiety. It's lessened soreness and pain. You just put a few drops of Feels under your tongue, and you feel the difference within minutes. I feel calmer. My muscles are less sore after workouts, which is great, and my mood is lifted, and I can fall asleep more easily at night. Deliveries are hassle-free and delivered directly to your door without a prescription, and this is cool. They have a free CBD hotline for assistance to find the right CBD dose for you, which is incredible. The Feels monthly membership makes self-care simple. You save money on every order, and you can pause or cancel anytime. So start feeling better with Feels. Become a member today by going to feels.com/cleanup. Cleanup is all one word, and you'll get 50% off your first order. Wow, 50% off your first order and free shipping. That's Feels, feals.com/cleanup. To become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. Feels.com/cleanup.
All right, welcome back, everybody. We have some comings and goings for you, as promised. But first, Allison, I know you wanted to talk about a fast-moving development.
Yes, I love this. The White House has released a fact sheet for their strategy to counter corruption, which opens with a quote from President Biden. This back in June, I think. June. He said, corruption threatens United States national security, economic equity, global anti-poverty and development efforts, and democracy itself. But by effectively preventing and countering corruption and demonstrating the advantages of transparent and accountable governance, we can secure a critical advantage for the United States and other democracies. So this is an anti-autocracy deal.
Yeah. So that statement, you're correct, that was made back on June 3rd. And B, you were also correct in that we are facing arguments among political scientists, among experts, right, as to the advantages to Marshall for having open and transparent government as opposed to the rise of authoritarian, populist neo-fascist leaders around the world. And it fills my lawyerly heart with pride, right, to be making a case for things that we ought not to have to make a case for. So anyway, right, broad statement. At the time, President Biden directed his national security team, right, again, to create a comprehensive strategy that would improve our government's ability to prevent corruption, combat illicit finance, better hold corrupt actors accountable, strengthen the capacity of activists, investigative journalists, others on the front line of exposing corrupt acts. So pretty significant stuff from my view.
Heck yeah. And last week, in line with that whole direction, there's now a strategy out. It outlines a whole of government approach to elevating the fight against corruption. And it places particular emphasis on better understanding and responding to the threat's transnational dimensions. Including by taking additional steps to reduce the ability of corrupt actors to use the United States and international financial systems to hide assets and launder the proceeds of corrupt acts. I wonder what prompted that.
Yeah. So, you know, you described it as whole of government, right? It's a five-pronged approach, right? So the first is modernizing, coordinating, resourcing U.S. government efforts to fight corruption. So a couple of sub-points with respect to that. That
as a former government employee, I have to say I hope step one is upgrading from Windows 95.
Probably, right? So first is understanding and prioritizing intelligence collection and analysis on corrupt actors and their networks, right?
Cool.
Elevating anti-corruption work as a cross-cutting priority in key departments and agencies across the federal government. So that includes Department of State, you would expect, Treasury, Commerce, and the U.S. Agency for International Development, right? So that is bringing folks together in the room who understand complex financial transactions and can connect the dots. And then increasing law enforcement resources, bolstering information sharing between the intelligence community and law enforcement. So that's all the modernizing, coordinating, resourcing. I think it has, you know, buy some new computers in there as well.
Yeah, probably. And I'm kidding. I think they were on Windows 7 when I left 3 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Well,
Now, the second part is curbing illicit finance, and that is by revoking Elon Musk's Times Person of the Year award. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, God. Can we do that?
So curbing illicit finance, they do this in a few ways. They issuing beneficial ownership transparency regulations that basically, Andrew, helps identify bad actors hiding behind opaque corporate structures.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, Delaware. enacting first-of-their-kind regulations that target those closest to real estate transactions to reveal when real estate is used to hide ill-gotten cash or to launder criminal proceeds. Blavatnik, Rob Lavlev, Trump's entire tower. Working with Congress and within existing regulations to make it harder for certain gatekeepers to the financial system, including lawyers, accountants, and trust company service providers, to evade scrutiny. Love it. And finally, this is part four of prong two, working with partner countries through multilateral fora, diplomatic engagement, law enforcement cooperation. So you just work and partner with other countries. Your partner countries are our allies and capacity building to strengthen their anti-money laundering regimes. So, you know, this is a global approach.
Yep. Yep. So third prong is holding corrupt actors accountable. That, I think, will be of strong interest to our listeners.
Mm-hmm.
So the specific approaches on there are increasing, elevating diplomatic and development efforts to support, defend, and protect civil society and media actors, including investigative journalists who expose corruption. I cannot pass lightly over this point, right? Like, we just had an administration that openly declared the media to be the enemy, that did literally nothing in connection with Mohammed bin Salman ordering the beheading of a U.S. journalist, fostering an environment that led to congressional candidate Greg Gianforte punching a member of the press and then getting elected the next day,
mm-hmm.
right? It is just an environment that is unthinkable in the United States, and it's here. And yeah, like, part of what, you know, I can think of a number of third-party actors about whom I would say have mixed motives or even terrible motives. But part of how we hold government accountable is by fostering an environment in which those folks can go to the press and expose bad actors within the government of both parties. So I really love that point. Sorry, I know I'm dwelling on it, but significant to me. New initiative funded for partner countries to detect and disrupt foreign bribery, establishing a, I love this, kleptocracy asset recovery rewards program that will enhance our government's ability to identify and recover stolen assets linked to foreign government corruption that are held at U.S. financial institutions.
Yeah, I like that. It sounds like something you would hear a commercial for, like, Yeah. If you join now, you can take part in the Kleptocracy Asset Recovery Rewards Program.
I'm in at the gold tier level. working with the private sector to improve the international business climate by encouraging the adoption and enforcement of anti-corruption compliance programs by U.S. and international companies. And again, the goal there is to avoid kind of the perception of, you know, a race to the bottom where, you know, you have one jurisdiction that, decides not to comply, not to ask questions. And all of a sudden, either all the assets start flowing through that jurisdiction or everybody else has to play along.
Yep. And then in typical government fashion, after you establish something, you have to have a plan to maintain it. That's always the next step after you establish something. It's even in federal criminal procedure, right? Obtain mm-hmm. and maintain a conviction. So this is that global stuff you just talked about. This is how you preserve and strengthen that. And that's by working with G7 and G20 to implement the strong transparency measures. You build and expand effective, resilient security institutions to target corruption, right? And then reinvigorating U.S. participation across a number of initiatives, including the Open Government Partnership and Extractive Industries Transparency Initiative, which I assume we withdrew from or just ignored when Trump was in office.
If it's an international agreement, that would probably be a safe assumption.
Yeah, especially right? Anti-corruption international agreements.
Yeah. All right. And so last prong, right? I know we've done 30 subpoints, but prong five is improve diplomatic engagement and leverage foreign assistance resources to achieve the anti-corruption policy goals. And again, you know, we cracked the joke, but it really does matter whether the top-down direction is America first, we go it alone, or a climate of international agreement. I've delivered a couple speeches on this, but I'm moved by the report of the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, which comes out every January, that they do the doomsday clock. And when they move the doomsday clock to 90 seconds to midnight, that is the end of human civilization as we know it. The chief, John Mecklen, said it is the erosion of multinational institutions that are capable of resolving existential threats. That's the largest existential threat, right? It's not just nuclear war. It's not just climate change. It is to fix these things, we have to cooperate with other nations. And how we cooperate with other nations is a top-down message. So that's why this is important to me. Elevating anti-corruption work as a priority within the diplomatic corps. Reviewing, reevaluating criteria for government-to-government assistance, including around transparency and accountability. Wonder where they learned that mm-hmm. lesson from. Expanding anti-corruption-focused U.S. assistance and monitoring the efficacy of this assistance. Building additional flexibility into anti-corruption initiatives and broader assistance efforts to respond to unexpected situations worldwide. And bolstering public sector anti-corruption capacity and support, including to independent audit and oversight institutions.
Independent audit and oversight constitution. I love it. I love it. Yeah. Institutions. Because, yeah, I mean, last week it was. We just talked about strengthening our own internal agency auditing and, you know, whistleblower protections and inspectors general. So this is all, this is, to me, is clearly a bunch of really brilliant people putting together multiple agency strategies and then extending it to be multilateral with other, countries and allies, and then keeping it flexible and then maintaining it and then developing those relationships and strengthening, bolstering transparency and anti-corruption. I love this. I think it's a brilliant plan, and I'm excited to be a part of it.
I want to head off some, negatrons right away, you know, who are going to say, well, this is a sternly worded crunch wrap and it has no legal effect. Not necessarily the case, right? Like you direct funds on a basis of kind of setting forth priorities. But B, in some sense, like the words do matter here.
It's
right?
Even
like,
just the message, right?
Yeah.
It's almost like, hey, just announce an investigation. You don't even have to do one. but these words are very important, that the world sees this, that other leaders, democratic leaders see this, that autocracies see this, that despots see that we are doing this and we care about it, is important. It's very, very important.
I couldn't agree more. And the way in which I would make that pitch to our negatrons is, think of how mad you were when George W. Bush sent, "I believe the UN should be abolished," John Bolton out to be our ambassador to the United Nations, right? Like, that made you mad. And it made you mad because, and rightly so, it made me mad, right? Because that message matters, right? Because when the UN says, "Hey, who's your representative?" And you're like, "Oh yeah, somebody who thinks you ought not to exist." It's exactly the same as putting Rick Perry in charge of the Department of Energy, right? Like, the signal in a great many cases, right, is a significant component. It's not to say you don't also have to do the hard work of filling in the gaps. It you don't also have to make policy, but in many ways, not doing that thing is a big change.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. All right, Andrew, that is it for the anti-corruption plan, the big giant five-prong multi-level plan, as we must have with in all government things. But let's talk about some comings and goings, shall we?
All right. So as you know, as we've reported on the show, the Senate, the Republican members of the Senate, continue to do everything in their power to delay it every turn. But President Biden announced six new ambassadorial nominees today. Those are Constance J. Milstein, who is nominee for Ambassador Extraordinary and Plenipotentiary to the Republic of Malta. Nice kick. Alina L. Romanowski, who is the nominee for Ambassador Extraordinary and Plenipotentiary to the Republic of Iraq. Margaret Whitman, Ambassador Extraordinary and Plenipotentiary to Kenya. January Contreras, nominee for Assistant Secretary for Children and Families at the Department of Health and Human Services. Agnes Schaefer, nominee for Assistant Secretary of the Army for Manpower and Reserve Affairs at DOD. And Timothy T.J. Baker, who is the nominee for the Commissioner of Federal Mine Safety and the Health Review Commission.
Hey, Andrew, what's the difference between just an ambassador and an ambassador extraordinary and plenipotentiary?
great question. I don't fucking know. I'm going to find out.
One's clearly way more fabulous than the other. And if you're keeping count like we are, that's five women. But hey, don't worry if you're a white dude, as far as we can tell. So is TJ Baker. So you can still make it in Biden's America. You'll be okay. The president also announced three more executive branch appointees today. Eric Raven, he is the nominee for Undersecretary of the Navy, Department of Defense. And it's Kristen E. Jones. She's the nominee for Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Financial Management and Comptroller, Department of Defense. And Ventress Gibson, nominee for director of the Mint, Department of Treasury.
Yeah, so two things. Number one, in addition to being an awesome name, Ventress Gibson, if confirmed, would not just be the first African-American woman to lead the U.S. Mint. She would be the first African-American period to lead the U.S. Mint. And she's currently the acting director there. So again, you know, not exactly a reach of a pick. And the second thing is, An ambassador extraordinary and plenipotentiary is the highest, the first rank ambassadors. Plenipotentiary means they have the full authority to represent the entirety of the government. So these are your first tier ambassadors. And again, yeah.
Okay, so when we think of an ambassador, that's them, like Masha Yovanovitch, et cetera. They were the exceptional
authority to set policy and to speak on behalf of the government.
Hell yeah. Congrats to everyone then. And I am sure, Andrew, all of these will be confirmed by a voice vote, right?
Oh, yeah.
No, that would be any sensible function in government, where I'm sure Ted Cruz is going to delay hearings until the middle of the 38th century, probably.
Yeah. Ted Cruz is a monster.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. And I can't wait to see his text messages from January 6th. All right. Ooh. Now, that is episode 48 of Clean Up on Aisle 45. Again, thank you to our patrons. Thank you to all of you for listening. And if you want to support the show for as little as a buck an episode, it really helps us out, makes this whole thing possible. You can do that at patreon.com/aisle45pod. Anything else? Any final thoughts you have today, my friend, my real life lawyer, my dungeon?
No, this is our week before Christmas. So, you know, if you're out there, if you're visiting family, you know, please
we got
be
one
safe.
More.
Travel safe. Yeah, no, I know. But, you know, this is by this time next week, folks will have already, you know, left, gone to airports, that sort of thing. And I just want to emphasize our message from before Thanksgiving, which is, you know, if and this has really happened in my family, a couple of folks and a couple of things. If there are gatherings that you're not comfortable going to, you know, listen to that voice in the back of your head. You know what it means to be safe. So please do just think of yourselves, think of your family, think of your country and your society, and have a wonderful holiday.
Yeah, I agree. I've had people ask me, like, my cousin won't get vaccinated. Should I go to Christmas? I say no. Personally, I wouldn't. We are at we're December 13th. So we are, I think, beyond the point that a booster or a second shot is effective, right? You know, it's tough. And I've had people turn down holidays for that reason. But, you know, you can always wear a mask, maybe have outside, whatever it is. But yeah, definitely be careful. Travel safely. We will see you next week before we have a final holiday send off for the Christmas holiday.
Absolutely.
But this has been an epic show, an epic night, an epic epic hearing in our history, in American history. Boy, this has got to be one of the five standout moments, and this is just the beginning. So thank you so much, Andrew. I've been Allison Gill.
I'm Andrew Torres.
And this is Clean Up.
Clean Up on Aisle 45.
On Aisle 45. And thanks for dropping by, San Diego. Clean Up on Aisle 45 is written, researched, and produced by Allison Gill and Andrew Torres, with editing by Molly Hockey. Our art and logo designer by Joelle Reeder and Moxie Design Studios, and our music is composed and performed by Adam Orr. Clean Up on Aisle 45 is a proud member of the MSW Media Network, a collection of creator-owned podcasts dedicated to news, politics, and justice. For more information, visit mswmedia.com.
They might be giants have been on the road for too long.
Too long.
And they might be giants aren't even sorry.
Not even sorry.
And audiences like the shows too much.
Too much.
And now they might be giants are playing their breakthrough album, Flood.
All of it.
And they still have time for other songs.
They're fooling around.
Who can stop they might be giants and their liberal rock agenda?
Who?
No one.
This ad was paid for with somebody else's money.
Hi, this is John Cryer, and I am hosting a new 7-part true crime podcast called Lawyers, Guns, and Money that'll challenge everything you think you know about U.S. covert operations and presidential misconduct. From Jack Bryan, the director of American PSYOP, comes the incredible true story of John Mattis, a newly sworn-in Miami public defender in the 1980s who has found himself completely in over his head.
I step off the plane, and there is a van with a couple guys with Uzis. And one of them in broken English said, "Welcome to Bogota, John."
Mattis's first felony defendant has been arrested for having a machine gun and tells Mattis a dangerous secret.
He was shipping arms into Central America on behalf of the CIA. As a first-time lawyer, I want to act like I know what I'm doing.
But with the help of a Colombian drug smuggler...
How much money the CIA raised by hitting up drug dealers?
A lot of money, millions of dollars.
An Alabama mercenary.
They were prepared to die to the last man. I saw this in them. I saw the fire in their eyes. And they made me their war chief.
And a newly elected senator, John Kerry.
We are looking at allegations of drug running, gun smuggling, conspiracy to commit murder and murder itself.
He'll fight to free his client.
The judge said, "Show me, in a courtroom, how we were at war.
Expose an illegal war being run by the White House.
I mean, I wanted him involved, but I didn't want to be on record as doing it.
And somehow stay alive in the process.
I just escaped a kidnapping by the CIA in Costa Rica.
This is Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
So you have a man in an Armani suit standing in the bow of a boat with a rocket launcher and says, if I lose sight of you, I will launch. You will be vaporized.
Available everywhere starting October 29th, or get it ad-free and early starting October 22nd at lawyersgunsandmoney.supercast.com. There you'll find bonus episodes along with exclusive content. Subscribe now.